Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and have on the political right, Senator Dan McKay. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Natalie and everybody out there.
And on the political left, Councilwoman Shireen Gourbani.
Hiya.
So,
this
Dan,
is the last show, by the way, as a council person.
It's true.
Okay.
Right?
And so we get a pile on here.
Yeah.
We do get to pile on.
The last 2 weeks, we've talked about being on the conservative right in your case and the political middle in my case, and we are going to the left today, Dan.
We are. I want everyone to know I drove to the show. I bought a Subaru just so that I could come to the show today and feel like I was aligned with the left and ready to go.
Should have been an electric car.
I know. I couldn't find batteries large enough to battery this.
So we're going to spend the first part of the show getting to know Shireen a bit more personally, and then the second segment we'll talk her ideology. So Dan, I'm going to turn it to you to hit her with some questions. I'll jump in as well.
All righty, Shireen. We started with everybody, and I think it's important that everyone know, where did you come from?
And yes.
What alien ship dropped you off? I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your growing up.
Well, in a story similar to Superman, but a little further north, I grew up in at the time, I feel like it's changed a lot, but the great state of North Dakota, where I lived on the edge of Bismarck. I've always been a capital city kind of girl, lived in mostly capitals my whole life. But Bismarck was, at the time, I think 50, there were two little cities next to each other, Bismarck and Mandan. And I think it was like 50 or 60,000 people. I lived on the edge of town.
Like Murray City, just to give someone a reference.
Yeah, when I was growing up, actually, so born, my parents, really different than some of your stories, though some similarities as well. My mom was a teacher and was a farm girl raised on the North Dakota-Montana border. And I would say that the West that she grew up in was not quite wild enough for her. So after teaching in Montana, Wyoming, she applied to teach at an American school in Tehran. So she moved to Iran in 1978, which, if you know your history or have seen the movie Argo, know that it is not a great time to move to Iran.
For an American, for sure.
But she loved it and loved teaching, and it took her really actually around the world a couple of times. But in that instance, met my father, you know, like revolution in the streets. They fell in love.
Wow.
And
did your mother have Iranian roots that took her there?
No.
No, so it's on your father's side. Okay.
Yeah.
I wondered.
Yeah. So she had many stories about that experience that definitely shaped, I think, my worldview in a real way of being just interested in the world early on, being interested in other places. But anyway, so they got married. Well, she was evacuated out of the country ahead of the hostage crisis. They were able to reconnect in Germany and then ultimately came back and got married in the front room of that farmhouse that she grew up in.
Oh, wow.
And it was, you know, it was wild. It's an interesting story because he was, we haven't spoken in a long time. I haven't spoken to my father in over 20 years, but when I was growing up, I just remember that there was a lot of addiction. There was a lot of drinking. He was a very kind and loving person, but he was very wild. Mm-hmm. And she always thought that it was because of the circumstances of the political environment that they were in, but he was wild at heart. And by the time I was six, he actually moved to California. So we spent a little time traveling back and forth between North Dakota and California, trying to see if they would make it work. But really, by the time I was into junior high, he was pretty much out of the picture. But anyway, so I grew up truly in a small house, which was something she was very proud she was able to keep over our heads through all of the tumult.
Yeah. Siblings? You have some siblings?
I don't.
Okay.
I'm an only child. Okay. Yeah. But so another interesting tidbit, my dad did sort of Johnny Appleseed his way around the community. So I did later find out that I had a sibling who's almost exactly my age, who was adopted and raised in a different family just about 40 miles away from where I grew up.
Wow.
But we've never met. And he then had additional children that I've also never met. So my entire life experience has been as an only child.
Mm-hmm. And so then did you go to high school then in North Dakota?
Yeah. So my mom was an English teacher in a Catholic high school. I went to the public school in my neighborhood growing up and then went into the Catholic school system in junior high and then into high school. So I had my mom as a teacher, which was...
Dan, this tells me why Shireen is so articulate. because I do find in Shireen someone whose her words come easily to her. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like she's got a mother that specialized in the humanities. Yes. And then also taught you.
Yeah.
And one thing that Shireen does have is a real gift for language.
Well, and while that is a great gift, the other part that, unlike the switchblade, the other end of the Swiss Army knife, I guess, if you want to think about it that way, is growing up in North Dakota, which is a very conservative
area. Not when I was growing up.
Area, right?
So North Dakota was established by, in early statehood, the Nonpartisan League, which was actually a group of socialists. So there are many things that North Dakota has to offer that I think are exciting now. It's the only place that has a state bank left in the nation. It's a really cool bank that does incredible work for people, including I got my student loans there when I went to college at about, I think, 1.2% interest, which is a game changer for a young person going to school. But it was a place where my senators, my representative, were all Democrats when I was growing up. By the time I left high school I left there in 1999, the year I graduated. It changed a lot.
You found yourself in Minnesota for college, am I right?
I went to St. Cloud State University, went to a school that was close enough that I could drive, but also a place, I was looking for an environment where maybe other people I hadn't gone to high school with were, looking for a little bit of a change, and a place where I could study theater.
Okay. So did you get a theater major?
Yeah.
And then I know I'm doing this quickly, but what brought you to Salt Lake City?
Yes. So
I'm waiting to hear that she was like in some Broadway shows here or something.
No, a lot of community theater. I've actually been the executive director of a community theater. The one that I grew up in was in children's theater growing up, and then went on to, so graduating from high school, I knew that I mentioned it was a Catholic high school. So there were some service opportunities in that school. And I had gone to Guatemala twice to work in pretty impoverished communities to do things like pouring cement floors and working with an organization that my community had a relationship with, basically. But then from there, I knew that I wanted to do a longer form of service. So after college, I had applied to the Peace Corps, was accepted into the Peace Corps in 2003. So from 2003 to 2005, I was in Moldova, former Soviet Union. And then from there went on to,
because your communist roots in North Dakota weren't enough.
You so had if to you were listening last week, Dan accused me of being communist. Having lived in a communist country, I can tell you I am not a communist. Yeah. I am certainly very concerned with, the political ramifications that we see in the communist countries
that
we have left.
That's the second part of the show. Don't go there yet.
So Dan, I do share this with Shireen because I have been to Moldova. There's not a lot of people that can say that.
Yeah.
But what an experience to serve in the Peace Corps.
Yes.
I can't imagine when, I'm assuming you got a letter from them or was it an email told you where you were going?
A phone call.
And a phone call.
Time,
and they tell you you're going to
Moldova.
Chisinau, or however you say it.
Yes, exactly. I remember at the time I had been a vegetarian for a really long time. And the only place I didn't want to go was Mongolia because there were the Peace Corps volunteers are sometimes nomadic and they eat a lot of meat. And I was like, I don't know if I can do that, but, anywhere else was fine. And, was accepted into Moldova, served there with my husband actually. So we got married to serve in the Peace Corps together. But then after that, I came back to North Dakota. I was doing some work in the community, wanted to go to graduate school to study and understand volunteerism better, to understand organizational policy better. So I went to the University of Nebraska, and there we had a visiting professor from the University of Utah, George Cheney, who came out and did some really incredible, interesting work around globalization and economics, actually. Mm-hmm. And that stuff got me really interested in Utah. So I applied to come here for additional graduate work.
So I got to ask, I'm just curious, what was your reaction when you first came to Salt Lake City with that kind of background? You know, Guatemala, Moldova, whatever you said about North Dakota having
world
liberal
travel,
roots.
Really,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but smaller towns. And
so I'd never lived anywhere with mountains. So that was something that just was stunning. And into this day, I continue 11 years later, I'm stunned by the beauty of our mountains. But I will say it was so clean and neat and tidy. And I was worried that I wouldn't fit in. And then I remember we got to the place that we rented, sight unseen. And I was walking down to the grocery store. A guy came by on his bike. He was pretty drunk and he pulled over and he puked into some bushes. And I truly thought, I'm going to be okay here.
Oh, goodness.
What do you think? What do you think put
great
you...
ambassador. We were able to roll out the red carpet.
It was so tidy and everything
just
seemed
to
so
know it was
neat.
Real too.
Disneyland.
And I was like, oh no, it's okay. Yeah. Like,
what do you think in that background makes you a liberal?
A few things. I would say a big part of it is a desire to, or I guess I would say it's sort of a core belief that, my state senator, Paul Wellstone, when I was in college, talked about a lot.
Famous senator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This notion that we all do better when we all do better. And I believe that. I think that when we have those who have the least among us have some opportunity, that it really does so much for everybody.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Hey, in our next segment, we're going to talk about the ideology behind what liberalism and what it Shireen espouses to. So stay tuned with us, listeners. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Shireen Gourbani and Dan McKay.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are talking to Shireen Gourbani about liberalism and her ideological views. Dan, I'm going to go to you so you can pepper Shireen with the first question.
Well, I was just saying, I didn't get to finish my Swiss Army knife analogy. And I was just saying, like, you know, she is really gifted verbally as far as like being able to speak and deliver a line, right? And I was going to say, it is a double-edged sword because she can deliver it and, you know, boost you up and make you feel great. But at the same time, if you're not careful, she'll deliver a pretty sharp line.
I'm not afraid of a fight.
No, that is one clear thing that her background has taught her is that she is a fighter.
Well, and it's interesting because I'm more of a peacemaker. My background taught me peace.
11 kids, you'd think you'd be a fighter.
Yeah.
And she's a single kid.
So I'm finding the middle ground everywhere, common ground. I'm trying to just bring peace. But Shireen, liberalism and being a fighter.
So I don't identify as a liberal.
Okay.
Interesting, right? Yeah. So I guess I think about liberalism in a pocket of left, you know, ideology that doesn't always feel so aligned with where I am. And I think we're seeing more kind of discussion about progressives or progressivism. And I think that's maybe a little bit more where I find myself is maybe more in a progressive ideology, which it's a fine line. But it's definitely an interesting word.
Yes. Well, so this is a real gripe for me.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm plenty progressive, and yet I don't identify with most people who think
you're full-blown leftist, Natalie. Let's be very candid about where
when I was an intern in Washington, I remember going to a really important seminar, and this woman said that, you know, you need to liberate what's right and true and conserve what's right and true. Mm. And that's how I felt. And I think that's a progressive way to think.
Yeah.
How do you define progressive?
I will say some of the thing that kind of is tied to it more for me is liberalism for me is tied to maybe more structures in more entrenched democratic politics that I see to be as fundamentally ineffective as some of the stuff that I see on the right.
Is this unions? Is this?
No.
What do you mean?
No.
Entrenched?
So I would say workers' movements are very progressive, right? When we think about.
So what's the entrenched part of you know, liberal politics that you're referring to?
So the stuff that I really struggle with and actually a place that I find commonality with people on the right and even somebody like Mike Lee, who I come on this program and complain about a lot, are the way that we, you know, engage globally. Some of the stuff that we do around maybe more of a neoliberal ideology, which kind of passes as liberalism, are not necessarily places where I feel politically at home or very comfortable. Mm-hmm. So when I'm thinking about progressive ideologies, I think it is more tied to specific ideas on the left than it is to maybe this kind of notion of when we talk about the left and the right, I think we're really debating things that are sometimes outside of what people care about. And when I'm thinking about progressivism, for me, it's more like those kitchen table issues where people are kind of, you know, struggling with the really difficult parts of greed-based capitalism, right? Mm-hmm. And this is something I was thinking about earlier when we were talking about those influences that we had early on. You know, something that my mom said to me all the time growing up was that there are basically two roles or two questions that we ask in corporate capitalism. One, can I make money? And two, can I get away with it? And I think those questions guide our politics far more often than they should. And I think that that happens on the left and the right. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get kind of tied up in my political ideology. Mm-hmm. When I think about the giant, you know, spending that we just passed on our military, the way that we engage in foreign wars, the way that we push our policies and politics to countries that, you know, are struggling with, I would say, greed and corruption in some similar ways that we struggle with them here. Those are some things that, you know, when I think about big challenges that we're facing, restoring faith in government and really addressing the way that people feel like, you have to be an elitist to participate is something I'm worried about. Hmm.
So how does that, like, you know, how does that help you? Because in, like, on the left, there's infighting within the left about, well, what can we get away with, right? And you see this, I mean, different parts of the party are saying, boy, we need to go spend massive amounts in Georgia because we need to control the Senate because what can we get away with, right?
And well,
I mean, they want to spend 2 years potentially of trying to figure out how do we shape policy that gets the
Medicare for all would
Medicare
be a
for
perfect
all,
example,
you know, those kind of
yeah.
policy objectives.
Or even just a relief bill passed, right?
right.
So,
but see, you know, the idea though that, you know, you worry about one ideology, you know, kind of getting away with something, or, you know, how do you balance those sides of the party or that type of conversation internally?
Yes. I think it's a conversation that we don't have often enough, right? Mm-hmm. To really think about what it is that brings value to individual voters or everyday kind of people when they are going to vote for somebody. What is that person going to work on their behalf? What are they going to be prioritizing on their behalf? I mean, you kind of, you know, made mention of the millions of dollars that are going to be spent in Georgia, the like deep need for campaign finance reform across this entire country. I think it's something that many of us would agree on. I do think it's kind of a progressive idea that is certainly open to people on the right, right? Mm-hmm. But when we think about even the way that we have a lack of transparency or unlimited spending in our own races right here in this state, there's so much that could be done to improve democratic functions around, I think, good governance, transparency, fairness. And those are things that really matter to me.
I want to talk to you as a Salt Lake County Councilwoman, Shireen. How does politics, liberal conservatism, play out in the county council? In other words, you know, there's just this saying that local government's about, you know, dog catchers and curb and gutter, and it's not ideologically based. Is that a true statement from your experience in Salt Lake
County? A lot of the time it is, yeah.
Okay.
But when I think about things like tax increment financing that we might be looking at, or ways that we are putting money in particular projects and not in others, and the ways that we prioritize investments in public space, or, you know, dollars that might be going into incentives for businesses, all of those things are colored by, you know, political ideology. And I think we actually have a kind of a nice balance at the county level. It seems mm-hmm. like there's a lot of cooperation, and frankly, almost everything we do is bipartisan. It just, there's very little disagreement, actually. Some of the big disagreements that we have are around issues like growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that yeah. makes sense.
What has been, as you know, I guess as you've grown into the public policy making from like this, you know, it's interesting, this very educated background, you know, and, you know, public service, world travel, all those things. And then you get involved in Utah from a politics standpoint. What's been like the most, I don't know, interesting part that you did not expect to be the way it is?
So the thing that stuns me as a person who considered myself interested, engaged in politics, really how little people know and how great their desire is to understand. And I think that's something that's been really demanding for me, because I'm trying to meet that moment by educating and trying to push things out and draw attention to particular articles and try to push information. But it feels like if I even just did, and I do these weekly, I've been doing weekly updates on what people can expect to see at the county council on my Instagram stories, yeah. just like breaking down the agenda. People are so hungry to understand how systems work around them, whether it's the conversations that we're having on police reform, thinking about investments in affordable housing, or thinking about, you know, things like, yeah, like what is the role of government and where should it be and where do I put pressure to see the things I want to see? People are so genuinely hungry for that kind of information. And that's something that I didn't know how much time I would spend educating.
Mm. Tell us, we asked Dan, his political mentor, and I don't remember all he said, but he mentioned Ronald Reagan. I mentioned the Utah governors. Who are your political mentors? Somebody who's really guided your development.
Like yeah. Stalin. And,
yeah, so Paul Wellstone, as I mentioned, a big yeah. fighter for working people, for farmers, for labor. I would say that was happening at a time when the thing that really shifted my interest in especially serving this country in the Peace Corps, really giving back to my country in terms of that kind of public service, was 9/11 and the fallout from all of that, and wars that made no sense to me as we were trying to seek peace and build, I think, an opportunity. But I guess I was more interested in what we could be doing to actually build peace.
This is so interesting to me because I brought up Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. You brought up the
end of the Cold War, really.
Yeah, and the coming down of the Berlin Wall. You brought up 9/11, and it tells me that there's a whole group of people that this pandemic will be the shaping event in their political thinking.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I think that's really promising.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of lessons to be learned.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see, you know, how those lessons shape different, because, you know, I can walk away from one event and have a set belief of how this means something and what I'm going to do with it.
Yeah.
And Shireen obviously will walk away with something different. I don't know. But how, if you look at, let's just take the pandemic, right? And, you know, what lessons are you learning, and how does that change you and the things that you're looking forward to from the future?
So I would say this is a moment where I think we've really been asked to consider the role of government. And when we think about the ability for self-governance or small government and what that means when you have something as big as a pandemic and what the right balance is in the decisions that are made in that space is something that has been incredibly informative to me. I think when we were talking a little bit about people who've inspired me, I'm also really inspired right now by the work that's happening with the Poor People's Movement, with William Barber. Reverend Dr. William Barber is a person who I go to often to sort of get my self rejuvenated a little bit and feel like a message that makes some sense to me. When we think about that there were already 40 million Americans who were low wealth or poor, right, in this country, and to think about what's happened over these last 9 months, and that we've seen that some people who were doing okay are actually doing okay. And in some ways, their lives have been certainly challenged by the pandemic, but sometimes that extra flexibility in their work or finding, the ability, we're seeing more people buying places from other states, buying land here, you know, buying a second home, investing in whatever. That's all happening at the same time we have food lines like we've never seen in this country. That food line, those workers, those people who are falling off in this recession, which is kind of a targeted recession, not everyone's experiencing it the same way. Yeah. That space is one where I'm very concerned about what's going forward. And I really would like to see our governments at all levels really critically focused around what happened when we hit this pandemic. And then we have a certain group of kids in certain zip codes who were already struggling, even further behind. People who were already living on the brink of eviction, evicted. People who were already sick, now gone, right? So some of those core challenges around where we were already failing have only been enhanced in this pandemic. And I would like for that to be a warning and maybe a path for investment going forward.
So Shireen, we have, you know, maybe 2.5 or so minutes left. I want to hear what it's like to be a progressive, as you've described it, in Utah, with at a time like this, when we're asking what's the role of government, how does it feel to be you in this environment? What's next for you?
So it feels to me like a lot of screaming into the void,
okay,
which I feel like I do anyway.
Yeah, but that's not good.
No, but what I'm finding is that there's like an echo coming back, right? And I do feel like people are seeing in ways that they cannot ignore the disparities that were already present in our community. And in some ways that gives me hope for what we see going forward. I do think that I have been, just moved by people's generosity across all ideologies, all spectrums, when it comes to everything from the work around, you know, racial justice that is so important and has been such a big part of this year. And I think the work around supporting communities, when we think about the way mutual aid has really stepped up, different kinds of ways of supporting our neighbors, there's a lot to be grateful. I have a lot to be grateful for. And I think what's next, I'm not sure, but I'm interested in people with, I work full time, so I will keep going to work.
Yeah, yeah.
I work at the University of Utah.
Yeah, that's next.
So that's normal. That's Monday, right? But I kind of think I'm really interested in this idea of how do we continue to organize and put political pressure where necessary to see some of these things, some things change.
Yeah. I have really enjoyed learning more about both of you. It makes me feel like the future's bright if the three of us can have an intelligent conversation like this and learn and listen and grow.
I think we should do a fourth show because we're missing Anthony's side of the story.
The incredible producer.
He's our quiet, steady hand on the mic there. So
yeah, but I would just say that all people's opinions matter, and what's important is that we keep engaging, connecting, learning from one another.
I think it's true.
Yeah. Last word from you, Dan. Last word from you, Shireen.
Hey, if people can take a look at this show really and see that, hey, you guys can all get along. We really can. It's okay to disagree on stuff and move forward.
Keep an open mind.
Yeah. And I think too, it's been something that's instructive for me. I feel like I hear a lot from people who worry about talking about politics with their families. But I think if we can approach it from a place of, and I know this is like official into hippie territory, a place of love and a place of really empathy and trying to build that understanding of those around us, life's richer.
Here's to a great 2021. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center with Shireen Gourbani and Dan McKay. Have a great new year, everyone.